political leader doubts Palestinians' right to life. Maybe someday we will build that world together. Those are excerpts from Overnight, an Israeli strike turned my family's home in Gaza into a graveyard by Yusuf El-Jamal, writing from Turkey on Middle East Eye. Yusuf is the Gaza coordinator at the Palestine Activism Program at the American Friends Service Committee. He holds a doctorate in Middle Eastern Studies. He's a Palestinian refugee from Gaza and a senior non-resident scholar at the Hashim Sani Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Malaya in Malaysia. He has contributed to a number of books on Palestine, including Gaza Rights Back and Light in Gaza, and is our dear contributor and longtime friend here at the Electronic Intifada. We mourn for and with Yusuf and his family. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kbu.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industry's Child Care for Construction, working to provide resources and support for construction apprentices registered with the state of Oregon, in partnership with Business Oregon. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
I'm Ariana Huffington, and when I'm in the Bay, I keep it locked to Hard Knock Radio.
This is Harry Belafonte on Hard Knock Radio.
This is Dennis Kucinich here on Hard Knock Radio.
This is Ryan Dellums on Hard Knock Radio. What's up?
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We want to continue in our series of discussions around artificial intelligence, AI. We've had a number of guests on over the past few months that have where we've done deep dives into the ins and outs of this technology, the pros and cons, and the concerns that people have around it. One of the biggest concerns is how AI is using a lot of power, which results in them building a number of data centers in various communities around the country. We know that in places like Memphis, down in Arizona, I'm going to forget which part of it, I think it's Tucson, we know that there are plans to build these data centers in the continent, where it would use up unthinkable amounts of water, leave communities battling with pollution. And the question is, what is the benefit for those communities? So that's just the tip of the iceberg. We know that the head of ChatGPT, Sam Altman, has promised to build the hugest data center that you've ever seen. And it would take like 1 trillion gigabytes of energy, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know all the particulars in terms of that, but my guest does. Her name is Jean Hsu. She is the Program Director of Energy Justice. She's the senior attorney. So Jen, this is, Jean, this is right up your alley in terms of what we're talking about. Welcome to the show, and we're glad to have you. I framed it a little bit. I'm sure you can fill in the gaps, but the AI data centers, all of us use AI. I do too, you know? So, and I've been pretty open about it. It's been convenient. It's made life easier for the work that I do, et cetera, et cetera. And when people say, oh, it's using up 8 cups of water every time you do a request, I'm like, but you're on Google, Googling information, so you're using the same eight cups of water. And I guess collectively, it's out of sight, out of mind. I don't live in Memphis, so it's not necessarily bothering me. I don't live in Tucson, so I can turn on my tap and get the water that I want. And I don't know what goes on around the world. And I think there's this cognitive dissonance that we all have. It's not just with the data centers, but collectively when we go, you know, the computers you're using, well, that's coming from the Congo where they're chopping kids' hands off to mine the material for your computers. And yet we still use them. And we can go to a coffee shop and go, they're supporting genocide, and we're still there. And so that's a big challenge for all of us, and we have to wrestle with it and having these conversations with people like you who are frontline in this helps us, you know, to really position ourselves better. So thank you again for being on here, but let's talk about the data centers and, you know, let's wrap our heads around that.
Yeah. So AI data centers are actually far more energy guzzling than our current Google searches, for example. So a Google search versus a ChatGPT search, it's 10 times the difference in energy usage. So when we Google something versus asking the same question in ChatGPT, we're using 10 times as much energy. So that's why you're seeing AI data centers just kind of explode across the planet, across the US, but across the planet. And they are guzzling so much more energy as well as so much more water, as you were saying. One of the things that is really important to know about this technology is that big tech right now is making us all hooked on it and wants us to think that we are responsible for these football fields worth of data centers. They want you to think that, or me to think that, when we use ChatGPT. But academics have shown that the vast majority of AI is actually used for militarization, for defense. And so the normal public in the US using it doesn't actually take up that much energy in the AI sphere. But they want us to think that in order for us to defend the kind of infinite build out of it. And that's something that all community members should know, that you shouldn't necessarily feel guilty about using it, because this is not demonizing you as the consumer. This is actually demonizing a far bigger corporate structure that's been thrust upon us, that the majority of that AI use is for militarization, defense, and war.
Let me ask a couple of things. you said a couple of things, Gene, so I just want to get some clarity. One, when I go on Google, they have an AI mode now.
They do have an AI mode.
Yeah,
yes.
And so Gemini, I think it is. And so is that different in terms of energy usage?
No, correct. So a normal Google search like we used to do, I still do.
Right.
It's right. That versus AI, and AI being right. Gemini, ChatGPT.
I think for many of us, that comes up automatically now. So, you know,
yes.
So when you type it, unless yeah. you're opting out of it. Okay, so that's one yes. thing I wanted to make sure. The second thing I wanted to get some clarity around the defense of AI. If I'm using up energy as a consumer, that's what I'm told, then why would I want to defend the use of it in terms of how the military does? Or, you know, where's the line? Because I don't want the military using AI.
Exactly.
Ideally, because I feel like, at least under this administration, they'll use it against us.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We see how they've been irresponsible with other weaponry. So that's of concern. But if the general public is not really depleting the environment and is really these high-end usage of the military around surveillance and all that, well, that's concern, and that should be a line in the sand that we all kind of look at. But right now, it's people going, you just did a ChatGPT search, you're causing problems in Memphis, versus us looking at Peter Hegus in the Defense Department.
Yeah. So I think to be concrete about where this actually shows up, right now, as you said, there are so many communities rising up in incredible shows of democracy, really, to rise up against the building of data centers in their backyard. So we have what you said, you know, in Tucson, in Virginia, that's been ground zero for it, in Indiana, actually in California, in Santa Clara County, that is also the new data center alley. So it's coming close to you as well. And where push comes to shove is that those community members are asking their town councils to say, what's the public benefit of these data centers? We don't want them because of the extreme harms to our electricity costs, to the air pollution because they're being kind of fueled by fossil fuels, to our water, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what these town councils are trying to grapple with in the public is, you know, big tech is telling us this is for the public interest. And they're saying it's for your and my usage. So shouldn't we, because we're using it, shouldn't we say yes to this data center? And this is where it gets concrete. We have to force those data centers and those big tech corporations to actually tell us what this is for. Because right now they're masking it as it's for the public benefit, it's for you. But in actuality, the vast majority is for defense and things that we don't support. So we have to get that transparency out there in order for us as communities to weigh what is that public benefit versus what are the harms. Don't sugarcoat it and say and blame me for it, that this is for me. You actually have to tell me what's the percentage that's actually for public use versus far deeper and scarier consequences like militarization and defense.
Appreciate that clarity on that. And that's an important one. As you're talking, a couple of things came to mind. One, why does it take so much energy, especially in terms of water?
So, and I am not an engineer, but the layman's way of explaining this, because I'm a layman on it,
right.
is that many of these models are using language models. And what that means is that in order for them to generate some response to you, they are sifting through enormous amounts of information to find patterns and then to be able to spit out something to you in response. So they are calculating so much patterns of information. They have to consume, to build any model, they actually have to have an enormous amount of data fed into this program. This program has to then figure out the patterns that it wants from this data and then respond to you. Versus a Google search where you are looking for a normal Google search, not Gemini, where the program is literally finding phrases in kind of in this big amount of information and just spitting out to you the websites that exist. So
right.
AI just takes a far, like, you know, 10 times amount of energy because they're actually sifting through so much more information to spit out something to you that is far more you know, to many people, far more digestible than going through websites yourself, but it takes so much more program power to do that. The aspect of this that requires water, so that's the electricity part. That's why you need so much energy. While when you're doing that, these data centers are just pumping away and literally sifting through all of this energy, and it's just getting extremely hot. So there's just, you know, power cords and boxes and, you know, just, you know, to the normal layperson, it just looks like metal boxes full of wires, and it is extremely hot. And in order to cool down that amount of energy and heat, water is used to cool it. So water is basically being utilized as a cooling technology in this. And many people have criticized the water use. And so the new way to do it is to cool it using electricity now, which is the alternative way to cool it, which just means more electricity is being eaten up to cool these centers.
Let's go back to the water part. When I first heard about the amount of water that was being used to cool the data centers, I also noticed that a lot of hedge funds and a lot of very powerful billionaires were buying up water rights all around the world.
Yep.
You know, from Timbuktu to Tootaloo, Mississippi, wherever there was water, they were buying up the rights. And I'm sure, you know, Antarctica is in the picture somewhere as well. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you're buying up water rights, but you're buying up water that eventually we drink, right? And that's concerning, because I'm saying to myself, most of the planet is made of water. Why don't you use the water in the ocean to cool these things down? And for some reason, and I never got a clear answer, so hopefully you can clarify this. They're like, well, we got to use this drinking water. So that's what I'm hearing. The second thing is, I'm going, well, in places that are devoid of water, like in some of these desert countries,
like Arizona and New Mexico.
No, not the states, but the countries where they develop, you know, technology to purify the water that comes from the ocean and things like that. Right. So, you know, so why not use that, if, you know, or the ocean water? And then three, with all the brain trust we have in this talk about American excellence and looking at what China's been able to do, why can't we just say the priority will be to figure out how to make a data center where you don't need to use this amount of energy or this amount of water to cool things down? That's what your brain trust is supposed to do. It's supposed to get your best and brightest minds and say, let's figure it out, because ultimately there's a finite amount of resources, and that's going to create a scarcity. Scarcity model is going to be good for me to make money, but it's not good for us as consumers if we're on the other end.
Well, I think that's the answer. You answered your own answer with that final sentence.
I did.
No. The reason why we are seeing this type of a total to public resources and
try not to use the expletive.
Oh, sorry about that. A total FU to public resources is because of the profit motives behind this. So you're asking, you know, wonderful questions. Why shouldn't we actually have far more efficient data centers? Why shouldn't we be powering it by renewable energy? You know, shouldn't we have already figured out something else? But the fact of the matter is that big tech right now is in cahoots with the Trump administration, is in cahoots with the fossil fuel industry, is in the cahoots with electric utilities, all of whom benefit profit-wise from using the status quo system of inefficient technologies to guzzle up more energy that the public has to pay for, and to take water because it's a public resource and it's cheap. Salination, for example, is extremely expensive. So who wants to pay for that? Big tech doesn't want to pay for that. So that's why they're going into, you know, everyday America, New Mexico, Arizona, places where it's cheap land, cheap access to energy, and where even though there's little water, they're big tech, they're able to actually take it and use it because the governments want them there. So it's all creating these environments for revenue generating corporations to benefit from it. And that's, you know, that's the heart of where we are right now. I just got back from Brazil, where we actually convened the first group of climate groups that are working on AI. And I mean, there are groups in Brazil and Chile where there are extreme, extreme drought circumstances where Google and OpenAI have come in to build mega data center facilities because the land is cheaper there. They can get cheaper electricity. And so they are moving south in the continent. They are moving into South America to avoid kind of the excess costs, the time, the transmission issues, the politics of the US. And so we're seeing this this very scary imperialism of big tech and fossil fuels move, you know, from North America into the South as well as Asia to exploit new, cheaper areas for revenue and profit.
What is the response to those governments, and why would they have them come in to these places? You know, Brazil has new leadership. So one would think that was a step in the right direction. Why would that, why would they allow people to come in? You know, in many of the Asian countries, they've always been on the cutting edge of technology and understand this balance. Why would they allow data centers in those places? I'm just curious, what's the conversation like, and what's the kickback on this?
So the conversation is that AI is the new arms race. So you want data centers and AI in your country in order to have access to it. So the global South right now wants to be part of that arms race. They don't want it to be just concentrated in North America. And so they are inviting big tech to come in to build it there. And I think that's the scary part about big tech is that they're actually far more powerful than the fossil fuel industry. They're brokering deals directly with governments in a way that the fossil fuel industry hasn't in the past. And they are facilitating who has access to this technology. And everybody has put so much techno hope in AI. People actually don't really understand what it can do. It has defense capabilities. So countries are all clamoring for AI to come to their sites. And they, as our governments, don't care about the public as much. And so they want to be at the tip top of that sphere. They want to have access. They want to be a part of the arms race in order to defend themselves and get in on the industry.
That's the voice of Jean Hsu, Program Director of Energy Justice and a senior attorney. You know, Jean, one time I was talking with a graduating class and I asked them a question, which is, what weapons are you forging for our community? And I didn't necessarily mean weapons like guns and what have you, but what new things are you bringing to the table for the benefit of our people at this point in time? And I'm looking at the movements that we all associate with, you know, the climate justice movements, energy conservation movements, all these different folks who are in the millions who gather, try to figure out how to fight these governments that are very intrusive, and I like the word you use, imperialistic now, in their endeavors. And I guess I would pose the same question to us, you know, because there's a lot of smart people, there are a lot of brilliant minds, there's a lot of folks that like to use the word, let's reimagine. And are we at a point where we need to start, you know, reimagining what tech looks like? And are we at a point where we have to really go all in and join this arms race in a different way? Like, I will create a system that will, one, move me away from being dependent upon needs. Two, I'll create something that is the right way. And we start moving forward, because it's quite clear it's going to be a long, hard fight to stop these folks without an alternative that we can rely upon. Are we at a point where we start building these things ourselves? And I'll just conclude, like, these are our peers that are behind in terms of creating and developing. You know, these are people that we probably went to school with. So this isn't somebody that is so far removed. These were people we sat next to in classrooms, people who we probably see day in and day out. They work in Silicon Valley while we work in classrooms and what have you. So they're not necessarily smarter or more imaginative than we are. They just went to a company and they started to do things, and maybe it's time that we start using our brain trust and come up with new technology that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of questions around how who should have the right to control AI and how do we use it for the public benefit. And right now, the entire industry is unregulated, completely unregulated. And in fact, it's been given a thumbs up by President Trump. Trump loves AI, which should, you know, be a big asterisk for people. If Trump loves AI, there's something that we should be questioning about how this technology is being wielded and used and who controls it. So, you know, what's interesting...
Well, let me just get clarity on one thing, and I didn't mean to interrupt. See, when we say control, we're thinking like there's a few companies, Gemini, Grok, ChatGPT, and those are the ones that control. But the technology behind it is something that we can all gather and do ourselves if we know how to program and move in that direction. That's the point. Unless you're telling me that we have to go through their data centers, that we have to use their infrastructure. Is that what we're saying? Which means it's about who gets access to something that they're setting up, or are we in a position to set up our own situation?
So that's a fantastic point about infrastructure. So right now, it's a monopoly, very few companies control the infrastructure of how, you know, and control the programming, right? Anthropic, Gemini, OpenAI, Microsoft. So there's just a very few amounts of companies that control these technologies that we're using. One, you know, possibility that some folks have actually come up with and, you know, want to perpetuate this is the idea that we could create our alternative infrastructure systems where we don't depend on their data centers, and where we can have, you know, autonomous systems where the community can, you know, build the data center that only serves their needs. Their needs, doesn't have any excess militarization stuff, and that, you know, it's community controlled and locally owned. I think these are, you know, really imaginative alternative systems. It's similar to what we've been pushing on the clean energy end. We want rooftop solar and storage. We don't want to depend on utilities that price gouge us. So I think that is possible. We haven't. We need a push for that if that's what we want. And right now, in terms of regulation, regulation favors these monopolies, essentially. Same as electricity, same as fossil fuels. Currently, the regulatory system allows for these huge, you know, companies to basically control and sit at the top, control this entire infrastructure. And they're actually, you know, on the energy, you know, parallel, for example, these monopolies actually prevent and stop and obstruct people from having their community energy systems. So we need to have like a very deep legal dive and community dive into picturing what our ideal system should look like and push as far as possible, regulation, et cetera, to get those autonomous types of systems where we are far more in control of the technology and can, you know, basically say no to uses that are harmful to the public in general.
Jean Sue is our guest talking about data centers and their proliferation around the country and around the world. If you're just tuning in, you're a senior attorney, so put on that hat for a minute. And this is what's going on through my head. So we have an administration that said AI is unregulated, so you can, it's wild, wild west.
Yep.
You can do what you want. And so that deregulation should also apply to me and you if we decide we want to do something locally. But you said that these big companies are stopping that from happening. So what is the legal, you know, argument that they use that would prevent me and you and couple of our friends from setting up shop and doing our own thing and saying, we're not going to use Chat, Croak, or Gemini. We're going to do this locally controlled type of thing. And let me just say this for people listening. In recent months, there's been takeovers by other entities. So the music industry would be one that has come in and they've gone to very popular places where people were composing their own music. And it's like, now UMG, you know, and Sony, we control it. And, you know, and we're going to take over and we're going to move everybody out. And so, you know, folks are now finding that these big conglomerates have walked in, change things around. They now control those spaces. And those communities that have been displaced are going, maybe we should just create our own, right? We've seen this thing with the energy, right? It's like, we just need to create our own. Books are being banned. So, you know, we need to create our own. And we're now seeing the type of restrictions around programming, you know, on TV and movies. And folks are saying, create our own. And then the last frontiers on social media, where, you know, I say free Palestine and I'm shadow banned. You know, you show a gun and say, you know, kill all Asians and kill all gays and kill all blacks, or have a president bash Somalis, and it's going viral all over the place with no restrictions. So there's so many people that are dissatisfied that are now looking for alternatives. And in an unregulated world, should we not be taking advantage of that? But you did say that these big companies were putting the kibosh on that. So I wanted to know, what's the legalese, I guess is the question, that they're coming up with to prevent us from creating an alternative?
So great questions. I think it's on a couple of different levels. So one, on the electricity level, that's probably the most firm. It's extremely regulated in the sense that utilities have a monopoly over the grid, who gets to plug in, etc. And they have, in many different states, banned communities, towns, states from owning their own grid systems or renewable energy systems. So that's actually embedded. So if we were going to try to do our own, you know, data center and try to power it, it's actually, there are several regulatory barriers that exist that wouldn't allow a municipality, a town, or a state to actually have their own grid, feed it into a data center, etc. So that's like on an electricity end when you're looking at this at the ground level. The thing that you're talking about, which is really interesting, is the alternative chat GPTs, the alternative AI systems. And I think that the difficulty that we're seeing right now is that there are a few companies in the world that control the technology. The technology is extremely, it's extremely confidential, and it has taken so much money to do. It takes so much money to actually gather that information. So unfortunately, we aren't seeing, there are AI startups, but they all are basically wanting to get bought out by big tech eventually. And so there's just a scale issue on how to develop that technology. And you really just have a handful of companies that own that. And the other scary part is that many of these companies have partnered with academic institutions. So you have, you know, the Meta endowed chair at Stanford, you know, who's working on AI. So you don't even have independent academic institutions that might have more resources to do this, to act independently from these corporations. Mm. So there really is this stranglehold on who has control over this technology. And because it requires so much resources, it just stays there. Now, I'm not a programmer, so I don't, you know, and I'm not a data scientist. So that's my understanding of why it's caught there. And we don't have, you know, autonomous systems popping up. But having said that, you know, the world is vast. I'm sure there are China programmers, there are Indian programmers, like there are people around the world who have less resources and maybe less confined, that may be, you know, able to generate something that is more open source eventually and that the public can use. But I don't think we're at that point yet. But that doesn't mean that it may not happen.
I still want to lay down with this a bit. I know that so many inventions or ideas from them come from people who are without, right? Yeah. We see that in so many things. You know, I mean, hip hop is our background here, and we see like folks creating something out of nothing, and then it gets, you know, institutionalized, and, you know, and somebody else comes along and does it on a larger scale. But it really was somebody looking, going, wow, I never thought to put my name on top of a building and use it as advertisement. I never thought to take a sampler and use it that way. Never thought to take a turn, you know. So there's a lot of that that goes on. And we see that all around the world. You know, when I traveled, I've seen people who have very little but can do a whole heck of a lot. One concern that people have had, you know, with AI becoming so commonplace is that it has stunted people's ability to think. You know, to think critically, to problem solve, to I don't know if it truncates our imagination, but I would imagine us being online and everything and instant gratification has stopped us from doing that. We were just talking about our kids before we got on, and one of the things I remember is that when we would go on long drives, 2 and 3 hours, we didn't have headphones to put on. We didn't have a screen to look at. We had to look out the window, and we had to make up games and had to think. And I remember thinking about a lot of things that eventually I'm doing today, you know, like daydreaming, like one day I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and creating things in your head and just using your imagination, because that was the only recreation you had. And folks are very intentional now. I need to get you off the screen so you could just think on your own. Yeah. But I'm saying all this because I want to come back to the movements that are fighting this. You know, the groups that met at COPPA, the folks that are, you know, that are in countries that are sitting there saying, we're going to be the ones to suffer the most.
Yes.
Those brain trusts, do we not start digging in and creating right now? I mean, yes, we don't have all resources, but there are countries right now that are sitting there going, you know, we have a whole country, you know, come here and let's do that. We have our own university. Let's do that. Do we start to very intentionally in our movement say we have a brain trust and all they do is figure out how to create the technology, right? The same way these companies have a brain trust, or at least they know where to get a brain trust. So let's buy Stanford and we'll tap into their ingenuity. Let's buy Berkeley and we'll buy their ingenuity. Because if I remember correctly, a lot of those contracts, you know, at those schools, even as a student, it's like, if you create something, we get a piece of it, right? I know that's Stanford's model. So should we in the movement sector start really moving in a direction where we're investing in fostering that alternative thinking, just to even start?
Absolutely. I think that this is the time to actually do that and start to wrap our heads around what a democratic technology actually looks like. I think the thing that makes AI so tough is that we're almost on this abstinence. You know, there's kind of two choices. It seems like you either engage in it and use it, or you're abstinent from it. And I think that's really tough for a lot of people because there are efficiencies, you know, that AI helps with, and especially for small businesses, like it just helps a lot more. But how do you justify the incredible social costs that are there? So it's, you know, the environmental costs, obviously. But as you were saying, there's also deeper social and human costs to our cognition and to our imagination. And so this is the time where people feel like they're racing to understand what AI is and get on top of it and use it. But I think we should just pause for a moment. We're in the US, by the way, which, if you're in the global South, you're not using this. Like you're really not using this. If you're, you know, so it's a little bit even, you know, this US mindset of I have to figure out how I can leverage this thing. But let's take a step back. Let's actually figure out, do we want to use this technology? How do we want to use it? What are the best ways that justify the cost to using it? And let's figure it out that way. what I'm seeing so much in the news every day, it's being bombarded by AI. There's 10 stories in the news every single day about AI. And it's the hot, shiny object. People are investing so much into it. Every day people are saying, how am I going to use this to leverage, you know, to make me more happy? And I just think that there's something extremely instant gratification about it that we just need to pause for a moment and reflect about our relationship with this thing.
Jean, Sue, at the start of the show, you talked about AI is primarily used by the military. So really, this is a weapon. And this comes back to creating our own weapons. Part of their weaponry is to get us distracted. So I'm playing with the little thing. I'm going, this is great. No, don't take away my AI. Everybody's cheering. And the Pentagon is sitting there figuring out, you know, can we create AI to get rid of women? You know, people over 5 feet tall. You know, they're being imaginative in oppression.
Yes.
And I'm saying that even, you know, our hallmark, collectively speaking, is that we've taken existing structures and figured out how to flip it to our advantage. And I think we have to look in terms of this is a weapon and we better develop our own, right? One that may foster our imagination versus truncating it. One that will move us in the direction of building community versus one where we're individual and we're in a harbor. Those are the types of things that I'm saying that collectively we have to start saying, here's a group of people that are dedicated to making sure we can scale up our values, that we can find tools to enforce it, that we can, you know, create our own weapon. I'll use that word very intentionally because it's a counter to a technology that is on its way to being used against us.
Yes.
Right? And I think in the past, if history serves me correctly, we didn't necessarily take that as serious as we should have when people showed up on the shores with guns and cannons and, you know, didn't figure out like, you know what? Wait a second, you took my fire.
Yeah.
On this continent and then our gunpowder and figured out how to use it against us. And I'm saying now we kind of need to have that vibranium, so to speak, proverbially speaking, for ourselves to make sure that this group of people that does not have our interests and are now increasingly being hostile to us, you know, we got to have something to protect ourselves. And this technology is not just theirs. This technology comes from all of our collective, you know, imaginations and thinking. Sam Altman did not create AI. He might be the chair of ChatGPT or whatever it is, but he didn't sit there in a room and say, gee, this is what we're going to do. He might have looked at you, me, and somebody else and said, I didn't think to do it that way, and ran off and took his resources and scaled it up the way that we've seen so many other people do, the culture vulture, so to speak. And
vultures.
And if we don't know enough about our own selves, you know, we get caught. And historically, you know, science and the brilliance of it come from our communities in Africa and Asia and all these places. And I'm just saying maybe it's the time to really fall back. And I'll just say we often say, what would the ancestors say? And we all say reimagine. We use those words. Now it's time to put it into practice.
You know, a part of me, and thank you kind of for this really rich conversation. I mean, a part of me, because I'm on the litigation end and legal end of things, my mindset is often to stop things from happening, you know, like to this is taking up our water and it's pumping out more fossil fuels, so let's stop it. And, you know, what you're saying is we may be able to find ways to mitigate the environmental consequences of this technology. We actually have to think a lot better about that, right? Like that's, so let's fix that. And if we can fix that, how do we reshape this technology into something that is not an opiate for the masses, but something that can empower the masses? And you know, that is a beautiful concept, and I totally am, you know, supportive of trying to, you know, whoever can think about that, that's fantastic. But I think what I'm trying to emphasize here that I don't think many people understand, because they think they're part of the AI economy, is that the current structure is so colonial and imperialistic in a way that I think normal people just do not get it. They don't understand that there's just a handful of white men sitting at the top of this apparatus, and they are exploiting our public resources, but also people and communities literally around the world. And, you know, how do you, given that that's such an entrenched, I mean, like you said, it's the men with the guns, it's the men with the steel, it's the men with the germs, right? It's like all of these weapons, and it's always concentrated in this small group. And so do you reimagine and you know, take that away in terms of movements and build something else? Or do you reject it and say, you know, I reject this. I actually don't need this technology. It's killing my brain. You know, we can thrive far better without it, because it exists and people are abusing it. So I think those are kind of the questions that I'm grappling with. Like, do you try to take it, build something better with it, or are you like, this is totally exploitative? There's kind of we're going to get into this to break the imperial system.
I think many people have felt that a tool is only as good as the people who use it. You know, if I have $1 million and you have $1 million, I think we're going to use that $1 million in a way that's beneficial versus somebody who wants to hoard it. You know, I have a gun, you have a gun, and they have a gun, I think we're going to use that in a way that might liberate us versus oppressing us. And I'm saying that, you know, complete rejection of technology that we all are using, I don't know if that's the way to go about doing that. It's not practical, just as much as, like, because people say, I ain't going to do AI, but you're on a smartphone that just, you know, that came at the behest of the Congo being exploited. So where do you draw the line? Yeah. And I would never say that you, me, or anybody else wants exploitation, but we're in the empire, so we're using these tools. Now the question is, how do we flip those tools, and how do we protect ourselves from first of all, creating our own tools while we use these tools, and not having a legal hurdle that comes up, you know, all of a sudden it says we can't create a new tool. You know, that's where I think we should be thinking about. You know, they laid out the game plan. They said it's unregulated. Well, if it's unregulated, now's the time for us to start, you know, start building. And you know, you don't have to get on social media and say, I'm building something, but just start doing it and create something now and relish in that. And then, you know, remember, our mission is to liberate, not oppress. It's clear to me that these are tools that are leading in oppression, you know, because... Yeah. Tell me if I'm correct in this. A big part of this AI usage, militarily speaking, is surveillance and looking at patterns of people and all that, right? Yeah. Right. So that's what this is about at the end of the day. You got 6 billion people, and ultimately, how can we, you know, keep track? So if we even have a conversation like this in the dead of night in the woods somewhere, they'll be able to say, oh, Dave and Jen were sitting there in the woods somewhere, and they had this conversation, and here's a video of it. That's what they're using their AI for. That's oppression.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how we can liberate ourselves.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm all for it. I just don't know how to do it. I'm all for it.
No, but you all have been on the front line, and you've been fighting those battles, you know, with the lawsuits and all that. And I guess coming back to the data centers, with the work that you all are doing, you mentioned Virginia being ground zero. I kept thinking it was Memphis, but maybe it's something else. What practical things would you ask people that are listening right now who want to fight this and at least not give it a rubber stamp? What can we start doing to really, you know, move the needle forward?
Yeah. So right now, communities are really surprised when this has been proposed in their backyard. So the Memphis folks totally caught off guard by it. I mean, just so many people totally caught off guard. So I think there are so many of these fights going on right now that this is the time, if you don't have one in your backyard yet, it's time to get your town to pass proactive regulations now on it. So don't be caught, you know, flat-footed. Don't be surprised. Assume that it is coming to you. And in fact, you know, Sam Altman said that he expects, you know, the world to be covered in data centers within his lifetime. That's how he envisions the world. So let's assume that it's coming. Let's pass proactive regulations on the books now that are really simple. And we propose our own policy framework on this. But the first simple step of it is, let's put in a public interest test. Simple. Put in a public interest test so that we as a community we actually can get data, like transparency about what's the supposed public benefit of this data center. Tell me, mm-hmm. because is it drones? It probably is. It's majority drones. It's not you using ChatGPT. right. What is it? And then let's weigh it against all the costs that we've talked about. Your water being drained, your air being polluted with new fossil fuel plants, your electricity prices being jacked up. So, and then communities should then be empowered to say those costs outweigh the benefits, and you can shut it down at that point. Now, if you as a community, and that's like a proactive step, because many towns and states don't even have that first step of communities mm-hmm. being able to weigh in and people to understand the consequences here. If, let's say the community says, yes, you know, this is a vast majority ChatGPT, we use it, we're going to say yes, it's worth our water drainage for it or electricity prices. So then we say, if you do allow for that data center to be built, make sure that that data center is as efficient as possible and completely, you know, charged and fueled by 100% renewable energy on site, so that we as a community are not impacted by it, that it is right. self-autonomously powered, and that it is efficient, and that it does not drain our water resources. Like, give me those guarantees. And if you can kind of isolate these data centers in that way, then that's great. So
that type of thinking is what goes on in my head. You know,
yes.
If I build a building, they say, well, if you build a building, you have to have X amount of parking spaces in this neighborhood, you know, to accommodate. And I'm saying, well, if you do build a data center, further, I don't want it. But if you do, then, you know, you got to replace the water that you use. If you use 1,000 gallons of water, then 1,000 gallons got to go to us.
Yeah,
you see
absolutely.
What I'm saying? A clean
yeah.
water or what have you. So that at least we're starting to have some sort of fighting chance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I think whether it's some places they were like, if you build a building, you got to plant trees and stuff like that. Those are
yeah.
the type of things that, you know, to at least start.
Yeah, absolutely. There's ways to mitigate. And the third thing that we, you know, are pushing for is, if the data center needs even more electricity than what they can put on their campus, then our argument is, fine, you can connect to the grid, but I don't want a new fracked gas plant in my community. I don't want to put a new coal plant there to fuel you. What I want you to do instead is pay me and all the residences, all the normal consumers and customers here. I want you to pay for my rooftop solar system and battery and storage, so that I, and microgrids, so that I get my autonomous community system that's climate resilient, that's affordable, that's not connected to the grid. I'm not going to be price gouged by the utility. You should pay me for that, because it's cheaper than building your fossil fuel plant. And I just, you know, released all this new capacity on the grid for you to use for your data center. So it's more economically efficient that way, and it's actually better for the climate and for our resilience purposes. So that's what we're pushing for, like, to still try to get our North Star of an empowered community, but have right. it actually be paid by the people who we are subsidizing right now in terms of building out their fossil fuel gas plants for them. People across the world are subsidizing the largest and richest industry in the world. That makes no sense whatsoever. So those are the things I think that, you know, can be liberation methods in this, right. If we're going to be moving around money and, you know, et cetera, then fine. Let's pay our way into something that liberates us instead of something that oppresses us.
Right. And I like that idea of, you know, you know, pay for my self-sufficiency. You keep the grid, I'll use the sun, you know.
You keep the crappy grid. Nobody wants this grid anyway. Go for it.
Jean Sue, thank you for joining us. Tell everybody how we can follow you in your organization's work.
So we have a website. We're called the Center for Biological Diversity, and our website is biologicaldiversity.org. And you can follow me. I'm no longer on Twitter, but I just started my Blue Sky. So I'm at A Jean Sue, AJEANSU.
There you have it. It's A first, right? A Jean Sue. Okay, there you have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Superhero, supervillain in the same code line. AI, writing futures. Who controls the design?
Is AI friend or foe? Is AI friend or foe?
Tools to heal and protect. Shine a light through the gray. But when twisted for profit, it can strip rights away.
Is AI friend or foe? Is AI friend or foe?
Data centers rising, choking out the air. Communities forgotten like nobody cares. But open source sparks from the ground to the sky. We can code our own hope, let imagination fly.
Is it?
In the hands of the people, it can build us strong. In the hands of the greedy, it can do us wrong.
Is AI friend or foe? Is AI friend or foe?
Hard Knock Radio. Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon,